Welcome to a special edition of the Black Is 15 Minute Break with yours truly, Casey Layman. We have John Bird and John Wood on the line tonight. This is John versus John, and tonight's topic is the Obama announcement and his support of gay marriage. Now, if you all have been listening to the Black Is Break over the last few months and have gotten to know John Bird and John Wood, you will know that both are very passionate, loquacious men with strong opinions, and sometimes they find themselves on opposite sides of the fence. So I was interested to see what you gentlemen thought about this particular announcement. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to go first or second. Mr. Bird, do you have a preference?
No preference at all.
Well, I think that you, when I heard the announcement, I was shocked. I wasn't so much shocked that President Obama felt that way. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that there were clues all the way along that he was that he was at the very least highly sympathetic to the idea of gay marriage, if not in support of it privately.
Okay. I
was
agree.
Shocked. I was shocked politically. People had said to me, both people who were hopeful that he would do it and people who were scared that he would do it, that that he was going to make this announcement, and I always brushed it off. I said, no, Barack Obama's not going to do that, because he knows that the instant he does that, he stands to lose a percentage of the black vote, and he needs to maximize black support in November if he's going to have a chance at winning. He couldn't have won in 2008 without an enormous overwhelming turnout among the black community back then, and he needs it now. So when he did that, I was befuddled politically. I thought, well, this is gonna engender support from some ardent progressives and gays and social liberal activists, but black people are gonna, you know, the religious black people, which, as you both know, makes up a huge part of our community, are going to be angry. Yeah, but since then, it seems as if there's been a battle unfolding in the black community, and not just from Al Sharpton and Michael Eric Dyson, but today the NAACP came out and officially endorsed gay marriage. I guess it might be possible that he can replicate black turnout the way he did in 2008, even with this announcement, but I'm still extremely skeptical that this was a wise political move.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything you said. I'm amazed that I agree.
I think me and John can agree on a lot in terms of political reality. Political positioning is a different thing. But go ahead.
Exactly. I feel like, yeah, I mean, it was a risky move because you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. Some people aren't going to like what you're saying. Some people are. It's a very polarizing topic. So anytime you take a side with something so polarizing, it's going to, you know, you're going to lose some people who were on your side. But I think the greater issue is, you know, when we look back in history, you know, we want to make sure that we're on the right side of the argument. You know, we don't want to be the guys screaming for, penalizing, interracial marriage or anything like that, or, you know, people enforcing the Jim Crow laws. Nobody wants to be remembered as the person on the wrong side of the argument when that thing's said and done. I think regardless of your religious views on whether it's, you know, moral or not, I think everybody pretty much knows what side's the right side and what side's the wrong side. And it's just a shame that there's so many religious blacks that are kind of used as the pawn of the conservative wing of this Republican Party. And it's, it's just embarrassing that we're even worried about losing a vote for Obama because of this decision.
Well, you know, I don't think it's necessarily fair to characterize religious blacks, socially conservative blacks, as being pawns of the Republican Party, because those people aren't going to vote for Mitt Romney one way or another. Some of them may stay home.
You'd be surprised.
But no, they're No, I don't remember. Even if that's were slightly possible that they vote the Republican. Romney's still a Mormon, so, you know, that's kind of
right. Good point.
There's not much option one way or another there for them.
Or if they just decide not to participate. That's just
what I expect. I expect a certain number of them to sit on the bench, you know. And
that's a shame. That's embarrassing to me.
Well, you know, I mean, everybody has a right to prioritize their own positions as they see fit. I can understand why you might say, well, look, this isn't really so big an issue when you look at the economy and healthcare and foreign policy and all these other things. And I would respect that view. But for me personally, John, I'll tell you, this is not a deciding issue. For my personal point of view, it's difficult for me to look at two men, two women, and say I regard their union as being marriage in the way that I conceive marriage. I perceive marriage as being the union between a man and a woman. At the same time,
I want to say that there's no fault in that. I think that's where a lot of people who are pro-gay rights, they lose the masses because they try to convince somebody that, hey, it's wrong to feel that way, and it's
right.
not. Let people feel the way they want to feel. It's like we need to stop trying to – just like, you know, it all comes down to free will. And
right.
that is one of the primal foundations of Christianity.
Right.
And although we may agree that this is a sinful act in God's eyes according to the Bible, we
right.
still see through the Bible that everybody has the right to make sinful decisions. And if that's the case, we need to respect that and support equal rights for equal acts.
Right.
It's not saying, you know, whether we call it marriage or domestic partnership or call it what you want to call it, as long as people are given equal rights for the equal acts, regardless of their sexual orientation.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in terms of attitude, we may not be quite as far apart as we might have thought, except that I can say that if it gets put on the ballot, if it were to be put on the ballot again, say a Prop 8 type initiative out here in California, I would vote to keep marriage as it's been traditionally been constant. I actually voted against Prop 8 several years ago, sort of as a protest against, I think, some of the sort of hateful rhetoric I thought was coming from the traditional religious community. But to be honest, I didn't expect that vote was going to lead to a victory. Taking it more seriously this time around, I do feel that I have to express my opinion honestly, you know. And as much as I am a person who's in favor of gay rights, I'm in favor of civil unions. I'm in favor of what you're in favor of, a basic level of respect.
So why would you vote against that? Why would you not support gay marriage?
Well, because
it's not saying
matter,
that
because
you're not
–
the vote isn't saying
yeah.
I agree with this lifestyle. That's not what the vote is saying.
I understand.
It's saying that I support their rights.
I understand.
Regardless of whether I agree with their lifestyle or not.
Right. Well, let me answer your question and then sort of comment on my attitude about it. The issue to me isn't so much one of legal rights. I am in favor of civil unions. I'm in favor of visitation. I am in favor of most of the things that come with common law marriage and most of the legal benefits that come with marriage.
Well, which ones do you disagree with?
What I'm saying is the exception is most importantly this, the title of marriage itself, because when you talk about redefining marriage, you are talking about redefining marriage. We're talking about changing the meaning of the word. You know?
Meanings of words change all the time without congressional support.
Well,
you know what I mean?
There's a certain way in which words sort of evolve, I guess, over extended periods of time. But we'd have to talk about specific things to give this conversation meaning. Marriage is something, of course, that has never changed, not really. I mean, you could argue that, well, there was a time where people of different races couldn't get married in the United States of America. But that was always a big exception in world history, and that was something that was ultimately wiped out here as well. And it's not something that really had any traditional foundation. Not in the Bible. And I'm not saying, you know, because it's in the Bible that's you know the truth for this particular argument. But I'm saying that traditionally, throughout human history, interracial marriage was never a contradictory notion, because marriage always revolved around the union between man and woman. And I think that our entire civilization, Eastern civilization and Western civilization alike, springs from that. But and so that's why I'm in favor of keeping it as it is, because I just see that as the bedrock of humanity, really, that particular
kingdom, and they don't marry, so it's like we can't even parallel that. We're not talking about homosexuality versus heterosexuality. We're talking about marriage.
But even I don't want to get into like a Darwinian sort of argument, you know. Even then, obviously, life is the entire circle of life is sort of continued through between man and woman. You wouldn't argue with that. But I just want to say this. Having said that, if the law winds up being changed, it's not going to be the end of the world for me. It just means that society is going to enter a phase where we're going to experiment with a totally new view of the family, of the traditional family union, of what marriage is. I retain my personal definition of it, and I think that it's possible that there could be some real problems that arose from that. But maybe society's just got to go that way, and we'll see. It's possible that you could legalize it and nothing bad would happen, you know? Or
right,
it's possible
exactly.
that
That's
you could
most,
use it.
It's most probable, actually.
Well, I matter
you know,
of
it's, I mean, I think
it's,
we're getting
it's,
told
it's,
this apocalyptic kind of version of the world post.
Well, I'm not one of those people who's trying to bring an end of days twist on this particular issue. I'm simply saying that I think that humanity, and I'm not even talking about, you know, intelligent design type providence here. I simply think that the family unit and civilization is based on the marriage between man and woman for a reason. I think men and women complement each other in ways that go to the very essence of the way humans are set up, you know,
and,
irrespective of your religious beliefs, you know?
I just have to interrupt, man. I'm really sorry. But we're not talking about homosexuality versus heterosexuality, because right now it's still not illegal to be gay. We're talking about marriage. So, like, if we're going to get into the philosophical debate of whether whether life can go on if everybody were homosexual, or I mean, we could get into a million conversations. We're not discussing whether it's legal to be homosexual or not. We're discussing it's legal for them to be married. The act of homosexuality is already happening, and it's legal, and it's fine, and nobody is trying to take that away.
You're saying that it would only be fair to confer the title upon them, to make everything fair and balanced between everybody. But in order to do that, of course, what my point was simply that you have to change the very definition of what that is, you know? And I think that that's more significant than
just sort of tweaking
the meaning of the word. That reverberations throughout all of society. And I don't know if you're looking at it in that way. It seems to me
I do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's tectonic plates shifting in a massive way. And, you know, I I'm a person, I'll be quick to say that gay people have undergone terrible persecution and terrible bigotry at the hands of hateful people. I don't doubt that at all. At the same time, I don't really equate this directly with the civil rights movement or put it on a parallel with the type of things that black people experienced back in the 60s and 50s and so forth. I do think
there's a difference. Of course there's a difference.
Well, yeah, I think that's a pretty major difference. I mean, we weren't fighting to have society, I think, redefine any long existing notion of what
I think we were
was or quality. Well, I mean,
I think we were redefining
the U.S. in the context of world history.
We were being redefined as human beings through the civil rights movement. We were being redefined as equal or better than our oppressor. That's a very radical thought. We were looked at as animals.
Yeah, you're speaking in a broad philosophical sense, and I understand that. I'm pointing to the very concrete redefining of the concept of marriage. I think that's a little different. I don't think that's their main priority.
I think their main priority is to get rates. I think if we wanted to call it domestic partnership, but they're able to get every single right that a heterosexual couple was able to get, then I don't think that would be as big of an issue, right?
No, I just I think that the people who are really passionate about gay marriage want marriage, and I think it goes beyond legal rights for them. Because if that was all it was, then civil unions would solve this problem. And there's a pretty strong kind of support out of unions, even among people like myself who wouldn't want to call it marriage. I'm fine with civil unions. But I shouldn't just say gay people, but people who are in favor of gay marriage generally feel that gay people should have that title of marriage, that it should be shared with heterosexual people, and that we should look at marriage between man and woman and man and man or woman and woman as being basically the same thing, not just in terms of legal status, but in terms of the way it's supposed to resonate to us. I'm sorry.
That makes the whole argument so trivial and so asinine. Like, seriously, about a word? I mean, my goodness,
talk to your friends. I'm sure you have friends like I do in the gay community. You can talk to about this, and I can guarantee you that it goes – because, look,
it's legal privileges.
Legal privileges are sort of are one thing. And John, I think you agree with me about this. Legal privileges are one thing, but it's more than possible. It's quite probable. In fact, I'm certain of it because I have gay friends and associates who I talk about this. Mine, but many of them would say that they want to be fully accepted into society in this way. You know,
ultimately,
that they
yes,
cannot
I believe
truly,
they would.
But you would agree that it goes beyond the legal. It becomes a cultural thing. And this is really a cultural statement. You know, that's why they call these things the culture wars. Because it's beyond legal privileges at this point. They want to put marriage at a place where, again, it's marriage, you know, because it has a certain emotional connotation. It has a great deal of cultural and historical and religious weight that comes with it.
So you're right.
The title
right.
itself is pride. Yeah.
If you guys don't mind me interjecting, I think, too, because I had this conversation with my dad when Prop 8 was on the table, and I think the fear of some heterosexuals, is the cultural aspect that John Wood is mentioning, because like John Byrd mentioned, language evolves. So like for our generation, the word gay doesn't mean what gay meant in the 1940s. It has a completely different definition. If we change the definition of marriage to include homosexual unions, then our children will come up with the word marriage having a much broader definition than as we understand
right.
it. And I think for some heterosexuals,
right.
they are fearful of that, because then the question becomes, where does it end? I remember an article coming out, might have been last year, about gay history being taught in schools. They wanted to be – somebody was making a stink about why, you know, gay Americans weren't highlighted in United States history, since so many gay Americans have made great strides, such as Harvey Milk and other people. And so, you know, for some people, they don't want that. They're fearful of that. I mean, we could make the same argument about the lack of black history in schools, but I'm just saying, I'm throwing that out there.
Right. Yeah, well, and people, more socially conservative people, are afraid of this sort of, I suppose that they would refer to it as the gay agenda. I guess that's not necessarily inaccurate, but yeah, it's sort of the wiping away of all the, the longstanding and highly prized cultural traditions we have. For a lot of religious and socially conservative people, they see it as part of a broader war on religion and on traditional values. I don't want it there necessarily, but I just reemphasize what I said before. I think that marriage is such a longstanding and central institution that to redefine it in this very quick and deliberate way could have ramifications of a negative kind that are difficult to foresee at the moment. Now, I guess it's possible that it could just wind up being just fine, but I don't think that people who are so quick to overturn that are really thinking it any further than their emotional desire, an understandable one, but their emotional desire to try and right some wrongs as they see them.
I understand completely where you're coming from, and I get it. I honestly do. You know, now it's being taught in school that marriage can be between a man and a man, so maybe that might influence my child to be homosexual when he's really not, you know, I get it.
Well,
I see the fear in it. I understand the fear. I understand the concern. I think it's time in general for us to graduate past that point, that type of thought. But if we all aren't there yet, then maybe we need to ease it through, because people still are clinging to their beliefs in a way that is not in line with nature and the way the world is moving.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I get that. We
want to ease people across the finish line.
Well,
you know, and I understand that.
Yeah, and of course you're speaking from the perspective of a person who very respectfully and very thoughtfully, and I appreciate that about you, but a person who's, I think, nevertheless in favor of it. But I can agree that whatever direction this ultimately goes in, I think that we need to move together in a way where we don't tear broader American community apart, and certainly Black American community apart. It will happen to one degree or another, regardless of anything we say, you know. And that's my next thought about this. I do think that sooner or later we have to start seeing a fairly serious backlash in the religious Black community, because up until just a couple of days ago, even if it was less and less the case that they could be seen as the dominant force in Black America, they were still a dominant force in Black America. Now, on an issue very central to them, and I kind of wish it wasn't so central, because there are many things I do think that are a bit more important than this, but nevertheless, now they're suddenly under attack by Barack Obama and the NAACP, and the tables seem to be turning in the Black community, you know? And so I
that's a good thing.
It hasn't really happened yet. In the way I think it's going to happen. But there are going to be some big tensions that are going to spill out in our community over this. And
like
I hope
what?
It doesn't, yeah.
Like
yeah,
what?
Just, well, when you go to church on Sunday, one thing you find is that, and it depends on what church you're going to, of course, but for the however many thousands of Black churches there are dotted across this country, people join together in church on Sunday, and the pastor gets up and tells them to abstain from the things of the world. And now one of the first things he's going to point to is the fact that the President of the United States and the most elite organization in the black community, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, has now endorsed an idea that is on its face to I think the majority of socially conservative Christians, and certainly Black Christians, an affront to the will of God, an affront to the gospel, an endorsement of sin, essentially. You know, there's no way that a reality like that, I think, just gets swallowed easily by a tradition as old
That's
and as influential as
so
Black
many other when we let so many other ungodly, sinful acts go unpunished or unfought against. So many of them happen, and we're going after homosexuality? Seriously?
Well,
the government is involved in so many sins. You know what I mean? We're talking about killing of murder in innocent people. I mean, look at what we did in Palestine. There are sins happening right now that are legal that we need to be fighting against. Look what Wall Street did. My goodness, this is just mass theft. And it's legal, and
well,
we're fighting homosexuality on a moral basis.
You know what, though, Wood does make a very strong point. And you know, despite how all of us might feel, you will have those ministers, and mind you, church and state are not supposed to mix. But you will have those ministers that utilize their power and influence to sway the minds of their flock, and they will get up on that pulpit and say something just like what Wood said. The thing is, I would like to believe you probably have two different types of people sitting in that church, all of them Christian, but you'll have your older people that are definitely highly steeped in the tradition, and you'll have your younger folks that are founded in the tradition but are a bit more open in their thought. And so even though they're listening to this pastor speaking from his particular perspective, they'll still make a decision based off of, you know, their own experiences or opinion.
So how do we fix that problem?
Because you have to recognize at some point that your minister is not anything other than a human. He doesn't have any supernatural powers or supernatural connection to the God that you worship even more than you. So the information that he's giving you is merely his opinion. You have
to
make your own decision.
That's a radical
While you're writing what you're saying, Kim, I wouldn't say that it's just a matter of pastors swaying their flock. Pastors also, to a large extent, reflect the opinions of their flock. So those opinions are going to be present with a lot of people in the congregation. Like you said, you're going to have your two types, and to a certain extent, the divide is generational. That's certainly true. What I would say, and John, I agree with your sentiment, and I wouldn't just point out the grievances, or rather the sins and the errors of government that we should perhaps be more concerned about. I'd also point to the sins and errors in our own community, in our own selves, and the fact that obviously our murder rates are far higher than they ever should be, that our culture is decadent and degraded, irrespective of where you stand on the gay marriage issue, that we have so many problems within our own community that we don't pay much attention to, that the church doesn't pay adequate attention to, until it turns to the gay marriage issue, and then all of a sudden everybody wants to pay attention. No, I'm not with that at all. For me, you know how I would cast my ballot. But I would say while I don't think it's an insignificant issue, that's pretty far down on my list of things that are really important. I would like the church to wage a respectful conversation about the issue of gay marriage. I would like us, in the more conservative religious black community, to make our position known. But I'd like us to pay broader and more focused attention on the cultural problems and the political problems that affect us, I think, in what is ultimately, I think, a more significant level. Because it doesn't matter ultimately whether gay people are allowed to get formally married or not. If we're killing each other in the streets and if we're indulging hypocrisies on every other conceivable level. So,
that problem isn't like restricted
yeah.
to us. Everybody's
well, no, of course
themselves.
Not. But we're talking about the black.
White,
we're talking about the black church and black community here. That's why I'm putting it in that context. Obviously, it's not restricted to us, but we have a particularly egregious share of some of these problems, and I do think that the gay marriage issue, well, again, I'm not saying it's not insignificant, whatever side of it you're on, has a tendency to distract from these other more important issues because it's so sensationalist,
I agree.
Well, with that point, what other issues do you all think Obama needs to bring to the forefront as he runs this campaign this year? Because now that he's made this announcement, if for some reason there are those people that are anti-social liberalism or are more socially conservative and take a disliking to him for making this choice, what options do you think he has, or what issues should he put on the table to perhaps sway their vote back to his side?
Well, President Obama needs to focus on the things that matter to all Americans, and obviously that starts first and foremost with the economy. He's perceived, and I think with quite a bit of justification, as having waged a rather weak and wasteful response to the economic downturn. And frankly, I think that if the economy were booming, well, maybe I shouldn't say this because I sort of thought it was politically ill-advised for him to announce his support for gay marriage anyway. But I'm not sure, but that this wasn't an attempt to steer the conversation away from the economy. But in any event, Obama, when it's all said and done, he's probably going to either win this election or lose it on the strength of the economy. And so if he doesn't stop running from his record, I do think he should run on his record and make the best of it. I have severe criticism about it. But I do think the Republicans have been unfair to him in some areas that he needs to make plain. He needs to show that the stimulus package worked as well as anything possibly could have. I'm not saying I think that's the case, but he needs to make that argument. He talks about the auto bailouts. He talks about bank bailouts to some extent. He needs to just make the case that he's done everything conceivably possible to both save the economy and grow the economy and take Mitt Romney head on. Instead, he's running from Romney on the economic argument because the Democrats aren't confident. I'm starting to think that Obama's not confident about it either.
The economy sucks. I mean, it was a huge problem, and him fixing the problem without the support of a Congress is going to be increasingly difficult. We worked on financial regulations that would keep these problems from happening and speed up the recovery, and it was blocked, and it was watered down. You know, it's just like we tried to tackle healthcare reform, and that would have generated so much more money in the pockets of everyday Americans that could have been spent back in the economy, and they blocked it, and then they watered it down. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, I think that Obama should have been way more aggressive. I think there's a lot of things he could have done that would have put us in a better situation right now. But I also understand that he was running against a brick wall, and he had to make concessions because both Democrats and Republicans in the Congress are pretty much in the pocket of big business, and that goes contrary to the best interests of the everyday American. So, if you know, we're not going to have our Congress voting for our best interests when they're not financially persuaded to. So, I understand how difficult it would have been for Obama to do what he needed to do, although I think he should have done more.
Yeah, but, John, I think you're going a little too easy on Obama by blaming Congress so exclusively. Remember, Barack Obama had a supermajority in Congress for 2 years. 2 years. Barack Obama's been the most prolific legislative president I think ever had, maybe the exception of LBJ or something, in this amount of time. And for 2 years.
You know what I mean? But we need
one major piece of legislation
more
after another, the auto bailouts, the stimulus package, the health care. Well, I understand it's not exactly what anybody wanted, but these were still enormous initiatives. And
but
the returns from them look meager, to say the least.
Isn't it funny how the tables have turned and you're defending Obama and I'm criticizing him?
Well, I'll criticize him and I'll defend him. Maybe it's just a matter of, you know, what's logical or not. I'll give you my opinion, John. I think that on the economy, it's my opinion that Barack Obama really did keep the economy from keep the recession from turning into a depression. I really do think he did that. I think he was right to continue the bank bailouts. Now, I think he could have done it in a way that would have given more relief directly to the average American. But even so, I think he had to preserve the financial sector. I think he was right on the auto bailouts, you know. And I think that that's an argument, that part of the argument, I think he beats Romney on. But everything after that, and my views on this have evolved economically since then, just doesn't seem to have worked. I mean, he took what, $800 billion. He took about $250 billion, propped up state governments. The rest was supposed to go to infrastructure development and R&D and so forth, and the rest went out in the form of temporary tax credits and whatnot that only lasted about a year. What wound up happening is those tax credits dried up quickly, those infrastructure developments wound up getting lost in red tape, and those state jobs that he saved by balancing the budgets of state governments, because there's no economic growth, they just evaporated into the wind. $800 billion basically gone, you know? So, when it comes to the growth side of it, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say the stimulus package did nothing. You know, their estimates would say it might have created 2 to 3 million jobs or whatnot. But, you know, if the Republicans keep throwing Reagan at him and he's got no response to Reagan, you know, Reagan created 16 million private sector jobs back in the 80s. It's a much different economy, but Obama doesn't seem equipped to make the argument, you know. Obama doesn't seem to have an economic argument, and that's the thing, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah. I was disappointed in Obama for different reasons. It's ironic that the points where you support him is where I kind of stray away from him. I feel like he was kind of pulled very centrist, and I wasn't in favor of the Wall Street bailout.
Right.
Let the system burn. Let's start from scratch. Shit happens. We recover. You know what I'm saying? It's not necessarily – this is all fiat money anyway. It's all – he said she owes this. She said he owes this. In reality,
yeah, apocalyptic if he'd have left the financial sector.
No, I don't believe in that.
I think so?
Realistically, nothing would have happened. A lot of rich people would not have – no, look at it. A lot of rich people would not have gotten paid. They would have lost a shitload of money. It does go further than that because then they pull their money out of the economy, which further increases the recession. I mean, I get it. I know what's happening. But my point is that is a reset. What happens right now, we're digging ourselves deeper into a hole, and we're pushing this problem further down the road, where when it happens the next time, it'll be way worse than it would have been if it happened right now. The problem has not been solved. We've pushed it down the road, and it's going to happen again, except it's going to be way worse. So I'm thinking this normal apocalyptic crash that was going to happen should have happened then. Because we're not solving the problem. There is no solve for the problem other than a hard reset, because too much money has been gathered on one side of the table. And you can't solve that problem economically. That's an impossible problem to solve. Money begat money. And that money will stay in these communities in large amounts, which is going to completely control the way our political system is moving. So, I mean, it's like there is no solve for this problem. Without regulations that put these greedy people in check to where they can't accumulate money on these large scales.
Well, yeah, I agree with you to a certain extent. I mean, I do think
money. We're not even talking about gold or silver. We're talking about theoretical money.
Well, but it's theoretical money.
It's
theoretical money with real value, though. I mean, just because the value
only because the people with it say it has value.
Well, it's not just the people. It's not just people with it. It's you and me. I mean, you. If I give you $5, are you going to take it? You're going to say that's not real money.
No, it's
I'm going to get my cheeseburger some other way. No, it's. I understand what you mean in the most I think abstract sense or more philosophical sense.
I mean, we have to understand,
this
thing we were,
but in
you
actuality,
and I both agree,
you know,
that there was a
money,
situation
money
that,
is money, and there needs to be money in the system for the system to function, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
And the way I kind of look at what
statement.
You're saying, and it kind of looks like you're saying, if we just let there be this enormous black hole in the middle of the economy, it's just going to suck the greedy rich people down, and the rest of us, we might, you know, lose a paycheck or two, but we'll be fine. I think the Great Depression taught us otherwise. But it's not just a matter of greedy Wall Street bankers, John. And the thing that liberals seem to forget
is
that this problem germinated in Washington, D.C. originally. And maybe with the best of intentions.
No, actually, that's not entirely true.
It really germinated on Wall Street,
was brought to Washington, D.C.
I'm going back to the 90s, John. I'm going back to Bill Clinton and the Community Reinvestment Act. Look, Wall Street has got its problems, and Washington, D.C. has its problems. I'm saying the thing that liberals leave out of this equation is the fact that Washington, D.C. directed Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to start making these subprime loans in the first place with the Community Reinvestment Act. Bill Clinton trying to
Time
do
out.
A nice thing by
Time
helping
out. You're talking about the head of the Fed. Who was that? Bernie Bernanke, which was a member is a Wall Street executive.
I don't think
so
Bernanke was in there. Was Bernanke in there when Clinton – When Clinton ratified the Community Reinvestment Act, it was the Clinton administration. Anyway, and the idea
was
that the banks would be directed to issue loans to people who are from minority communities and impoverished communities to help get them into homes, to help make them homeowners. Best of intentions, I'm sure, but the problem is that the people who were receiving these loans were never going to pay them back, and they got away with it in Washington at the time because the economy was booming. That sowed the seeds for this whole crisis. Now, in comes Wall Street, and they say, well, look, Washington is telling us to make these subprime loans. We know it's bad business, but if we spread the risk around, you know, we can perhaps save ourselves and leave other people holding the ticking time bomb. So
I think you might have things turned around. I mean, what time frame are you talking? What year is this?
Well, the Community Reinvestment Act took place in the 90s.
Before the 90s, but what sent it over the top, the whole practice in general is what, you know, everything is wrong about the whole situation. But if we're talking about what actually set this is a whole another podcast. I can't even begin to go into this.
Right.
This is a whole another podcast.
I want to say that I think this is
–
And I think this is going to be the first of a new series, y'all. So I thank everybody for tuning
in to
John versus John, which was originally supposed to be 15 minutes, and I think we probably gave you 45 minutes. And what you guys don't know is that on the site we actually have a chat room, and you have folks who are listening to this conversation, chatting about what you guys are talking about.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, thank you all for tuning in. Please make sure you join us for another Black is 15 Minutes Special Edition Break. Peace.